everyone, and welcome to another episode of Nest Style, where we bring you the latest in home and garden tips for seasonal living. So it's just me today, Jamie, all by my lonesome, but I'm still bound and determined to have a great show today. Teresa was unable to join us, but the show must go on, right? This is normally where I would ask Teresa, hey, how was your weekend? But since she's not here, I'll just talk about what I did this weekend. And what I did was rip out, seems like half my garden was infested with powdery mildew. If you don't know what powdery mildew is, then you must be living in a cave, because it is like one of the most common and most widely and easily recognized plant diseases that plagues every garden. I mean, I don't even care where you are. Maybe if you're in the desert, I don't know. Do you guys get powdery mildew down there? But I traveled a lot this summer, and I went to a garden writer conference, and I came back and I was just like, holy cow. I had to rip out my pumpkin plants because I just couldn't keep up. I tried to, you know, cut off the infected plants, but it was attacking the new growth. And then before I knew it, when I got back, my pumpkin plants were just covered in this powdery film, you know? I mean, and then when you rip it out, it, like, the dust spores or the fungus spores are just like spilling into the air, and I don't even know what else they're infecting. But it almost no plant is immune to this awful disease. I mean, my coneflowers, my tall verbena, you name it. I mean, I think the only thing that is still standing that does not have this powdery stuff are my euphorbias, sedums, and, you know, some of my more established perennials and shrubs. But it's awful. Anyway, I don't want to take up too much time discussing this thing, but there are some things, since we are getting into fall, you really want to make sure that we clean up all that dead and yucky debris before it overwinters and sprouts on your new plants next spring. So rather than putting it on our website, which is www.ahahomeandgarden.com, I'm going to put it on our Nest and Style Facebook fan page. So you can still see the fan page whether you're a part of Facebook or not, but just Google Nest and Style on Facebook and I will have a couple links about how to deal with powdery mildew. So then that way it doesn't become a huge problem next spring. Later in the show, I'll play Teresa's interview with two garden writers and photographers where they discuss some helpful tips on getting some really cool shots of your plants or your garden as a whole. But before we do that, let's cover some announcements. Okay, so if you're new to the show, welcome. Thanks for listening. And if you found us on iTunes, we also have a website, so you can come check us out at www.aha, that's spelled A-H-A, homeandgarden.com. You can also find us on Facebook, so just look up Nest in Style if you're on Facebook, and we have a group there that is pretty helpful in asking questions and providing resources. And one of the big things this summer was, what do I do with my green tomatoes? I'm sure a number of you have had this issue. Well, I found an awesome blog post by Willie Galloway, and I posted it on there, and it's got a number of different recipes for you guys to try if you have more than enough green tomatoes on your hands. So check that out. And then we're also on Twitter, Nest in Style on Twitter. So check us out there. You can ask questions, recommend story ideas. Maybe you want to be on the show. Maybe you have something that you think our listeners might want to pay attention to. So that is a great way to contact us. I also want to give you guys a heads up that we're going to have another giveaway, and this time it's going to be fall themed. So stay tuned for that. We're going to give the details on our next podcast, so you don't want to miss it. That's all for the updates. And since there's nobody around for me to banter with, let's just get on with Teresa's interview with Laura Matthews, who worked for years as a photojournalist and now photographs and writes about gardening in Pennsylvania for her blog punkrockgardens.com. And Krista Hansen, who is the social media director for Growing a Greener World, a national PBS TV series. If you guys haven't checked it out, you gotta check it out. And she is a photographer from South Carolina.
Well, I have the pleasure today to be sitting with Laura Matthews of Punk Rock Gardens and Krista Hansen of Growing a Greener World Television. And both of these women are excellent garden photographers. In fact, Laura Matthews used to be the photo editor at the Patriot News in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. And Krista has shot lots and lots of gardening photos from South Carolina and other places as well. So I'm just delighted to have you both here with me. Thanks so much.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us. This is great.
You know, my first question is, how do you guys define a great garden photo? What are the characteristics of a great garden photo? Could you tell us first, Krista, what you look for?
Sure. I love it when a garden, and this doesn't work with every photo, but I do love it when a photo can tell a story. And gardens speak so much to who owns or designed that garden that it's nice when the photos can celebrate a little piece of some detail that perhaps the gardener put in, a little piece of garden art or a really nice plant grouping that really speaks to something they had in mind when they did it. It's nice when you notice that and can kind of spotlight it in a photo.
Ah, that's interesting, Krista. What do you think, Laura?
That was a great comment. Awesome. to me, when I shoot gardens, maybe I'm more about interpreting a garden rather than telling a story about that garden. I kind of, depends on what I'm looking for at the time, but I try to avoid doing something very straightforward. I tend to get really low angles. I tend to play with light a lot, play with focal length a lot, just to try to shake it up and make the viewer see a flower or a bark in a different way.
So it's really about telling a story, showing something in a new and unusual way to kind of make people better understand where the inspiration was behind that and just kind of look at something different. Is that what you guys think? So what are some of the common mistakes that people make?
Well, I can tell even in my own photos, when I look back, if I was tired or not really into it when I was taking the photos, I can tell immediately. I'm just kind of taking the picture that's there. And a lot of times pictures will present themselves to you. Photos, you know, especially a well-designed garden, there are beautiful scenes every possible which way. And you might be on a hike and there's a plant just peeking at you from around a tree, and you know that needs to be a picture. And when you're tired, or maybe when you're just brand new to photography, you're just going to take that picture that was given to you. But as Laura was saying, if you explore a little bit, other angles and other light, you can really find something magical.
I love that word, magical. What about you, Laura? You've worked with a lot of photographers over the years. You know, you managed a lot of photographers. You've seen a lot of good and bad photos. What do you think are some of the most common problems?
Well, I would think with garden photography, the thing that people do most often is they shoot from standing position. They don't get down and look at the foliage that way. They kind of see, or up, absolutely, right, Krista? Yeah, see it from a different perspective. You know, or even not shooting straight forward onto a flower, shooting straight down on it, getting close. But also, I think it's really important to kind of, as Krista was saying, maybe decide what story or decide what object in the photo you really want the viewer to see. You want to direct the eye to what landscapers would call a focal point, what we would call a center of interest. So a lot of times you can do that by getting close to a plant using wide angle to kind of, you know, show the rest of the garden. But it's important to decide what you want the viewer to see and not just have a flat landscape without any background foreground relationship.
Ah, that's very interesting. And I guess, you know, when you're tired, like Krista said, you're not necessarily noticing that there's a piece of trash there or that you're cutting off somebody's head.
Yes, exactly.
We've all been there.
It's very important to be aware of everything that's in your viewfinder. If you're
that's
seeing
a lovely butterfly, but there's an aphid right there. Right. Let's get that. Let's wait till that's gone before.
Well, then you have a good bug, bad bug.
Or you have a telephone pole growing out of a wonderful rose bush that ruins it. You know, you really need to be aware of everything in the photo.
So what do you've given a lot of quick tips already, but there must be some other tips that you might want to share. What do you think, Krista?
My favorite is just, well, I guess it's two, but okay. One is always carry your camera. Carry it everywhere with you. Just take pictures. Today with digital photography, there's not the huge investment in film and paper that there used to be. Even if you didn't process yourself, just the paper alone just costs so much. Take lots of pictures and go back and look at them. But I love to play with lighting. My favorite, though, is just an overcast day. The whole world is your diffuser. And head out and you get, it's just, it can be the perfect light, and it doesn't even matter what time of day. You don't have to go for that really early or really late day.
Because I guess that, you know, noonday sun, bright sun, creates more contrast. Is that right?
It does. It does. And that's not to say you can't take amazing photos in that light, but it can be a little more challenging, or, you know, you suddenly have to, maybe in that case, something like the sun shining through a leaf is what you want to capture there, or how fascinating sort of the play of shadows could be. So there are lots of great photos you can take at that time of day too, but I love to play on just an overcast day. The whole day is your playground.
I think that's a really good point, because a lot of people think, oh, this is terrible light, it's cloudy, where the colors really stand out so much more, don't they?
And I'll tell you, it's true for plants, it's also true for people. Get out there and take your portraits then too.
I do prefer not to be taking the photo in the bright sun. What about you, Laura?
No, that's excellent about overcast skies. But I think you can play with light a lot, too. You can, what Krista was saying about backlit leaf, backlit flowers can just sing. Sometimes, too, if you have two different colors together, like if you're playing with red and yellow together and it's backlit, you can get shades of orange mixed in, too. I mean, that does take a little bit more trial and error to kind of get it right, but angular light can be really cool as well. Other tips, I'd say don't be afraid to get close, don't be afraid to get far. You need both. You know, if all you're shooting are close-ups of flowers, you're not giving much information about what the garden's looking like. Think about how your colors are working together in your photos too. And sometimes it doesn't have to be contrast, sometimes it can just be one monochromatic. And maybe just a pop of red or something that draws your eye, again, becomes that center of interest.
Ah, very interesting. So, anything else that you guys want to add that we haven't talked about? Any resources, any inspirations, anything that you have found has really helped you to become a better photographer? And I'll open this up to anyone who wants to say that. Of course, there's only three of us, but...
Well, I guess being true to Punk Rock Gardens, you know, I had just play. I mean, I just...
She challenges the rules, folks.
Yeah, I shot flowers in water recently through glass, you know. Ooh. I've kicked flowers to make them move and used a long shutter speed so it looked like they were blowing. I mean, maybe that sounds like plant abuse. I don't know. But, yeah, I mean, I've gotten underneath flowers and shot up to a blue sky. That's one of my favorite images. Just think about how can you do this differently. You're presented with this great beauty in your garden. Yes, let's document it. Let's show what it is. But then let's have some fun and interpret it in however you like it as well.
You heard it. What do you think, Krista?
That's great. Just explore it. I love to just crawl on the ground and get those unique shots. So what you were just, I can just picture you lying there, taking a photo up through some trees or under a fire hydrant, whatever. It's just, I might make this suggestion. A lot of people have questions about cameras and equipment. And I'm afraid I don't remember whose quote this is, but the best camera is the one you're carrying. So it's seriously, if the shot is there and you see something and you're inspired, your camera phone, if that's what's on you, is the best camera for you to have because it's what you're carrying. I will never poo-poo a point-and-shoot because there's some excellent ones out there. Even if you eventually plan to purchase, to spend a lot of money on cameras and lenses, and you can spend a lot of money on camera and lenses, start with what you have, and you can still work on all your framing. You can learn a lot about the different settings of a camera. You can still experiment with light. There's loads you can do. You don't need to wait until you can afford equipment. So just get out there and do it and enjoy it.
Well, you've heard it here. It's never been a better time to photograph. Never leave your camera at home. And be prepared for lots of exercise because you're going to be climbing over, bending down. And so who needs a gym? All you need is a camera and head to the gardens. Well, thank you so much, both of you. Krista Hansen, who is the social media director at Growing a Greener World TV, and Laura Matthews, the experimental Punk Rock Gardens. Thank you so much, ladies, for coming on the
show.
Thanks,
Teresa.
Awesome, awesome interview. I haven't had a chance to speak with Krista, but I've had a one-off with Laura. I've actually cornered her in the bar at one of the other Garden Writer meetings, and I showed her some pictures, and I said, why do these not look right? I mean, just like an interior, you know, the design of a room, why it might not feel right, there's a reason why certain photographs don't look right and how you can improve the shot based on the tips that these women just shared with us. So thank you so much, Laura and Teresa and Krista, for sharing some awesome tips. And really, honestly, Krista says it right. I mean, you just got to, actually both of them said it, you just got to get out there and do it and experiment. You don't need fancy equipment to learn these techniques. So thanks again, you guys. We hope that you have gathered a few ideas of capturing your garden in a whole new way. And, you know, if you'd like, send us some of your favorite garden photos. If you've had a chance to go out there and experiment before the rainy season hits, send us your photos and we'll totally put them up on future podcast pages. Or if you're on Flickr, we also have a Nested Style Flickr group. So you can look us up, join the group, and I can find the photos that way as well. Let's talk about real quick what you guys have to look forward to for the next Nest in Style episode. We are going to have another great Nest in Style giveaway. And remember, it's fall themed, so stay tuned for some ways to enter yourself into this awesome giveaway. There's going to be prizes. And then I'll also share with you my interview with Santa Barbara designer and garden writer Billy Goodnick. If you haven't had a chance to find him or read some of his stuff, he is a blogger for Fine Gardening, as well as one of his articles was just featured in Fine Gardening magazines talking about using existing trees in your front yard landscape. And also, we're going to share Robin Haglin, who is a Seattle-based designer. We're going to share five of her best pruning tips because, you know, fall may or may not be a great time to prune some of your shrubs or trees or perennials, but definitely give us some helpful insight into the pruning world. Till next time, go grow something.